Hello, welcome to Roots Runners Rhizomes, Health and Healing from the Underground. I'm Sarah Faulkner, and my lovely comrade and co-host Lauren Jamboni is traveling and cannot be with us here in the studio today. She said she was going to try and call in, so maybe we'll still hold out hope for that in a couple minutes. But at any rate, welcome to the show, everybody, and we're here in the studio with Andrea Elliott, licensed acupuncturist with a practice here in Hudson. Welcome to the show, Andrea.
Thanks, Sarah.
Come a little closer to your mic. There you go.
Thanks,
that's great.
Sarah.
Great. Thanks. So today, you know, we've had a few shows now. We have a kind of open-ended multi-part series going on with folks talking about their personal experiences with Lyme disease and the co-infections of Lyme disease. We've had folks living with Lyme disease, folks feeling cured of Lyme disease, and we've had local practitioners of various stripes come in to talk today. So today, Andrea is joining us as an acupuncturist who's been in private practice in Hudson for how many years now has it been?
Five in February. Mm-hmm. It will be 5 years.
And coming from your practice before that was based in Connecticut?
Yeah, I was at Mystic River Acupuncture with Kate Poole before that.
Great. So she's, you know, and Connecticut, of course, is also Lyme country. Mm-hmm. So Andrea
was, yeah, about a half, 20 minutes from Lyme, Connecticut.
Right. So Andrea's going to be speaking with us today about her various experiences treating people herself. And also we're going to break out into a general conversation about other resources and things that we know about for folks in the area. If at any point you want to call in and have a question for Andrea or us in general, the number here is 518-828-0290. And of course, any resources that we list, if you don't scribble them down in time, we hope to put them up on the Facebook page, or you can call in and ask or send us an email at rootsrunnersrhizomes@gmail.com. Okay, great. So, Andrea, if you could tell us a little bit more about yourself, how you came to practice Chinese medicine and where you studied and all that.
Right. Well, I began as an undergraduate in Chinese language and literature at Washington University, and then I didn't touch Chinese again for a while. I got interested in rainforest ecology and botany, and with also a background in anthropology, I decided my interest was really in ethnobotany and human use of plants. So I became interested in plant medicine and was interested in medicine generally. So I decided at that point that it made more sense to study Chinese medicine than medicine. And I got my master's at the Seattle Institute of Oriental Medicine in acupuncture and oriental medicine. And then I subsequently spent 3 years in China, sort of bringing my Chinese back and improving my medical Chinese, and also studying with a couple doctors of herbal medicine in China who continue to be my teachers. So I'm both an acupuncturist and herbalist, and that's what I do at my clinic here in Hudson.
Terrific. So one of the things I'm excited to chat specifically with Andrea about is, you know, the practice of medicine, as she just implied a moment ago, Chinese medicine and medicine, you know, there's many different ways of conceptualizing the body, conceptualizing the disease process. And, you know, I think it seems like a multivalent approach is really useful for Lyme. The pharmacologic approach would be the notion that there's an antibiotic that can kill a specific organism. And that is definitely part of many folks' successful treatment regimens. But in terms of how Chinese medicine is perhaps different than what we might call Western medicine or the pharmacologic approach, one of the main ideas is that people have constitutions, and that The seasons and environments and foods and medicines all have elemental compositions. So if you could maybe just, it's kind of a tall order, just talk a little bit about Chinese medicine and the idea of what is a constitutional temperament and when you look at a patient, you know, for example, like Western medicine, we might say that a 5-year-old boy and a 40-year-old woman, we might say they both have a cold, so let's give them this medicine, right? We wouldn't necessarily do that in Chinese medicine, right?
Right. So constitutional diagnosis is really looking at people as individuals, or there are types of constitutions. And in Chinese medicine, generally, you're looking at whether people are excess or deficient, they're hot or cold, is damp the pathogen, wind, heat, you know, what's the cause of the imbalance or the problem in the body. And people are different. So for example, in Western medicine, someone might be diagnosed with an ulcer and be given, you know, whatever medication is deemed appropriate for ulcers, or maybe they test for H. pylori. In Chinese medicine, you look at that individual and look at the signs and symptoms and see what they look like constitutionally. Is it a hot condition? Is it a cold condition? And there might be, there might be different subcategories of people who are afflicted with ulcers. There are different types of presentations for an ulcer, and there might be then different formulas that are given. And you talked about colds. People get a cold. We don't just have a cold medication. There are different formulas that might be appropriate based on the presentation and the constitution. And also this idea of constitution can have a specific meaning. One teacher, Dr. Huang, who lives in Nanjing, that I translate for and that I've worked with a lot, he talks about this idea of constitutional diagnosis and looking at the body type, the disease tendencies, the personality, the presentation of the tongue or the abdomen or the pulse, in order to decide which formula to give. So if someone has a big puffy tongue with a white coat, you might be looking at formulas that clear damp. They might have a damp constitution. I tend to have a damp constitution. And when I get a cold, I take a damp dispelling kind of formula to treat my cold. Another person might have a very strawberry red tongue or a thick yellow coat, or they might have a fever or not. You might be looking at a heat clearing kind of, or you might be looking at a hot constitution where it would be more appropriate. It would be better served by heat clearing kinds of medicinal. So it really has to look, it really has to do with looking at people individually and deciding on what you find.
And Chinese medicine certainly isn't the only healing framework that still employs the idea of humoral constitutions. Ayurveda, which is coming from the Indian continent and surrounding countries, traditional Tibetan medicine, and ancient Greek medicine also incorporated the use of different constitutions. And in previous discussions we've had here about Lyme disease, even from a Western medical standpoint, it seems like the notion of clinical diagnosis, that is to say, a skilled and sensitive practitioner examining a person and determining best course of treatment, as opposed to, I don't know what you would call it, diagnosis using external frameworks such as blood work and sort of standards for amounts of things that should or should not be appearing in your blood. You know, with Lyme disease, there are so many sort of irregular and erratic laboratory diagnostics that many people feel they've been successfully cured by individuals, Western or otherwise, Western medicine or otherwise, who are skilled clinical diagnosticians. So, you know, it seems like this is of real benefit to all medical practitioners to really not just rely on external laboratory results, but really to hone their skills as an in-person clinical diagnostician. And, you know, we can certainly learn from Chinese medicine, Ayurveda, and the other practices where practitioners are trained very well in these skills.
Could I just respond to that?
I think
especially when you're talking about something as complex and difficult as Lyme, it's all useful.
Right.
And you're right. The tests for Lyme are notoriously unreliable. It might mean something if you have a positive test, but it certainly doesn't mean anything if you have a negative test. And then there's a whole host of co-infections, not to mention the various strains within each co-infection. So I really like to say with Lyme, consider it all. I think the antibiotics can be very useful at targeting those parasites and killing them off, but it is often not enough for people. And I think Chinese medicine's strong point is, and some of these other traditional medical systems, the strong point is looking at the individual presentation and what people need.
And also, as some of these organisms that infect us, the different Lyme spirochetes and the co-infections, some people are reporting they seem to be, as organisms do, mutating, and that would mean they also begin to cause different problems for their hosts. So, really considering each individual and that individual's symptoms and working with those is very useful no matter what treatment strategy or strategies you decide to employ, for sure.
Right. This is one of the concepts in Chinese medicine is looking at the level of disease. Sometimes it's at a more exterior level, mm-hmm. much easier to get rid of. And then you go down through the qi and you go down through the various levels and get to the blood level. And Lyme definitely, some people take 3 weeks of doxy and they're done with it. You know, they had a mm-hmm. kind of flu-like symptoms or a fever, maybe got a bullseye rash. They take 3 weeks of antibiotics and they're done. And for other people, kind of inexplicably, it seems to go deeper. Mm-hmm. And you have to employ, I think, a more complex treatment regimen to get at that deeper level when it's affecting the neurological system, when it's in the organs, when it's in the joint, when it's eating your cartilage. You have to employ a more complex approach to get at it at that point, which means breaking down the biofilms using I think the herbals tend to be a little more complex in how they get at the parasites. So
maybe it's a good time to talk more specifically about a couple of different presentations that you've seen now, just so we can mm-hmm. Demonstrate sort of the different presentations of Lyme. So you've certainly worked with folks who've taken a round of antibiotics with some or limited success, but then find they need another form of treatment.
Yeah, and I think that's something that can happen. So like I said, some people will take, they have, the symptoms of the, initial infection, and they take 3 weeks of doxy. People are pretty well trained in that by now,
right.
And they're done with it. Some people will take antibiotics, initially feel better, and then a month later their symptoms return. And I think at that point you may or may not want to continue antibiotics, but at that point I think it's wise to introduce some herbal medicine or other ways that you have of combating that parasite. Like I said, take a more complex approach to get at it from different angles so that you can really, either bring it under control or eradicate it. It takes more at that point, including dietary changes, detoxing, sweating. Sweating mm-hmm. is one way to detox. And everything from, my specialty is Chinese herbs, but there are Western herbal products, internal essential oils, Chinese herbal formulas. There's a lot that's available for treatment of Lyme, and I think there's, as far as I can see, not one solution, but a variety of things that can be helpful. And if people take one thing away from this interview, I would say that if you have Lyme disease or anything looks like chronic Lyme disease, it's not the kind of thing that goes away on its own. You really do have to employ, a wide variety of therapies or the right therapy for you to really bring it under control. It's really important.
Yeah, and one thing I appreciated about our guest back in August, Heather Bruntill, is she stressed herself as a person living with chronic Lyme also that sometimes it's important not to obsess about eradicating the disease from your body completely.
Peaceful coexistence.
Right, right. And to really, because so much fear comes up for people, especially when we engage in kind of the notion that we're invaded or occupied or colonized by another organism. It's like science fiction. It can feel that way, especially when you have neurological symptoms. Mm-hmm. Andrea and I are going to talk about different strategies in just a moment, but I wanted to bring up now one practitioner, Hilary Thing, who offers a kind of an online interface for folks and does a lot of webinars. I recently listened to one of her webinars, and she has what she calls her Lyme recovery roadmap. And I think this is a great model on some level. Just the complexity and wholeness of it is a great model for a lot of different disease processes, not just Lyme, because, you know, just one component is bugs, killing the bugs. But the other things she says that are just as important in the whole treatment strategy are, of course, focusing on killing the actual organisms, also working with the biofilm, which maybe Andrea can speak to, maybe not in a moment, because that's a mysterious sort of, mysterious to me, component of the whole Lyme disease portrait, dealing with chronic inflammation throughout the body, working to have optimal gut health, intestinal health, and of course a lot of folks, it's been in the news a lot, the biome and sort of all the beneficial bacteria that help us in our bodies, especially in our intestines, but also throughout our body, detoxification, reflection and assessment, so kind of intellectually processing things about living with Lyme disease, current healing capacity, that's also kind of contextualizing overall health, not just seeing yourself as a person living with Lyme disease, but also your overall health portrait. Hormones, which is, again, we live as animals in an environment, and, you know, it's not just our own bodies. Creation of hormones, we're also in the water. There's a lot of talk about nowadays, you know, you see some animal species, amphibians in particular, are having high rates of mutations, and it's thought to be due to what is the word? The word is totally escaping me. When you ingest them in the water and the environment, and they switch on or off your genes.
Oh, the endocrine disruptors?
Yes, endocrine disruptors. There's and all kinds of medications and things that our water purification systems aren't built to filter out of the water table. So anyway, a lot of people who may not realize it, but they may have some kind of hormonal imbalance. And last but not least, attending to the health of mind and emotions. Good old fashioned talk therapy is just one strategy. Hilary Thing also talks about, managing your emotions and mood every day as a healing strategy, not just a kind of simplistic, if you feel good, you'll be well, level, but really just integrating that into your overall health and wellness, protocol. So that's Hilary Thing, who we'll be talking about in a moment, but maybe first let's talk about...
I just want to just go back to her, her, what do we call this?
She calls it the Lyme Recovery Roadmap.
Yeah, the roadmap. Just to note that Lyme sufferers often are dealing with mood disorders that are disease-related, that are related to the spirochetes, and that are affecting their neurological and their kind of psycho-emotional system in ways that are not normal to them. So people might be, you know, very agitated or depressed or anxious or paranoid is something I also see with people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not them. It's really they've been kind of taken over by the parasite. And that's something to recognize so that, you know, you don't think you're going crazy. And a lot of people suffering from Lyme are treated by the medical system and other practitioners like they are crazy, because it is kind of crazy.
Yeah, and I've certainly known people who were given psychiatric medications,
yeah, which inappropriately
didn't really treat the underlying mm-hmm. cause. And I mean, it's understandable in a way that someone, a helpful practitioner, would say, wow, you're really suffering from depression, let's get you on a medication. But unfortunately, the medication is not going to
right. And this is where I think we just, the medical profession has an inadequate understanding of Lyme disease and what it looks like and how to treat it. And it's really important, I think, for all medical systems, whether they're alternative like mine or mainstream, we all have a responsibility to understand more and to know what it looks like and what we can do. Because it's really, I think it's one of the scariest things, I think, that we can be exposed to in our environment.
Definitely. And also, in addition to each practitioner sort of cultivating a more holistic approach in terms of their clinical skills, also practitioners cultivating collaboration and networking, mm-hmm. Because no one has the one and only answer, because there is no one answer.
I've been searching for it. I mean, I keep, you know, wishing that there were one,
right.
you know, protocol, one thing that people could do. But I really think what I've assembled so far is mostly there are a range of professionals and modalities and products, including antibiotics, that people can try. And they need to be persistent, especially
and experimental too, right? Mm-hmm. A little bit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which right. You've got to, I think, you know, you're best served by just kind of getting curious and, you know, getting some good professionals to work with. And I listened to Hillary Things. I think it was the Lyme Telesummit. Lyme, what was it? Lyme Telethink Tank. And she had assembled, you know, many people that I know to be, you know, some of the top experts in the field, you know, ranging from MDs to naturopaths to acupuncturists to herbalists. She assembled all kinds of people who were living with Lyme. She assembled all kinds of professionals to kind of give their take on Lyme disease. And one thing I really appreciated, one thing she said, which is that, you know, you try something, and if you're making progress on that, you can stick with it until and if you plateau, and then you try something else. But it's really, it is often Lyme disease, I think, is trial and error. And if you find something that works, go ahead and stick with it. But if you're not seeing results, you've got to move on to something else, another practitioner, another modality, another product, something. But it's really important to be persistent.
Yeah. And, you know, to those of us living with Lyme, it's important to work with practitioners who we trust and hopefully have some kind of track record and experience, and you know, we can listen to them for guidance about how long to give something a shot, because sometimes that's hard to gauge, like, mm-hmm. well, how long should I try this before I give up, basically, mm-hmm. and move on if needed. So that's useful too. And you know, certainly it's great to have community and to talk about other people's experiences, learn from them. But you know, just also keep in mind that what works for someone else might not work for you. It's, mm-hmm. it's a good navigational tool, what works for someone else. But, you know, don't do what some people do, which is, you know, well, this worked for someone else, so I'm just going to keep doing it. And, you know, really, really be in touch with if it feels like it's working for you
and
or not.
My limit on that is, don't do something for months and months with no sign that it's working. I kind of use my, you know, Chinese medicine benchmarks for that, which is that, you know, I would say often, and this is just Chinese medicine generally, Chinese herbal medicine generally, you should often have a feeling within a week or two, or at least by a few weeks, that the formula is doing what we want it to do, that you're feeling a difference. And I kind of have the same rule with what people are trying for Lyme. You should have some sense, you know, fairly quickly, I would say within a week, within a few weeks, more like within a few weeks, that there's some positive change in your body. Not that you're completely cured, but there's some, you know, there's some positive effect. And you've just got to be vigilant and make sure that you're making progress. And if you're not, you move on.
Well, I guess
Just going back to the idea of, you know, constitution, everybody's different. And there are a lot of things that can operate in Lyme, you know, in terms of people's individual physiology and constitution that might make, you know, some of the interventions work for some people, but not for others. So, again, that recognition that everybody's got kind of individual physiology.
And that the world and our environment also has elemental aspects to it. My own Lyme experience was my worst flare-ups have been in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
Lyme, the organism, actually hates cold.
Mm-hmm.
No, loves cold, hates heat.
Probably.
Sorry, I said that wrong. So I feel like it really
doesn't like
thrives
heat.
Because heat can destroy it. And
right.
It's,
well, and that's probably why the infrared sauna can
right,
be helpful
exactly,
for people.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So it's interesting. So full disclosure here. So also this is useful information just in terms of what Andrew is talking about. So I got my last year is when I had the first blood test that showed I positive for Lyme antibodies. Before my Western blot even came back to confirm it, because I was very symptomatic, I went on doxycycline immediately, and I hadn't taken antibiotics in probably 25 years, and I was frightened to take them, actually, and I had some sort of preconceptions about what I might feel like taking them, and I actually felt great
mm-hmm.
taking them, and I went, oh, that means something. Like they are, and I eventually had what I now know to be a Herxheimer reaction and started to feel sick again. And then after sort of peaking, feeling good post doxycycline, then pretty much had a relapse maybe a month and a month and a half later, which is when I think, I can't remember the timing on it exactly. I probably went a little too long in suffering, but I eventually consulted with Andrea specifically about a protocol I had read about, which is the
Classical Perls line.
Yes.
So this kind of, again, brings us back to constitutional diagnosis. Heiner Fruhoff, who's a well-respected practitioner, mostly, I'd say, famous for his herbal medicine in Oregon, developed a line of herbal products called Classical Perls. And there are many different products in that line, some of which he formulated specifically for dealing with Lyme and other chronic inflammatory conditions. And I think, you know, it's interesting to think of Lyme as just another kind of chronic inflammatory, you know, condition that is caused initially by a spirochete, but it looks like a lot of other autoimmune and other chronic inflammatory conditions. So he has some products that he specifically developed for dealing with Lyme, as well as, you know, an herbalist can also has access to the full complement of Chinese formulas that might be helpful. And then, you know, there are other things in that line that you might use for specific problems or presentations. But he does have three products that he specifically sort of formulated for use in Lyme and Lyme-like conditions. And, you know, again, to further kind of explain this constitutional idea, I think it's interesting that the two of the formulas he created, the Lightning and the Thunder Pearls, are they're modifications of an ancient formula that really targets wind damp type conditions. And it is true that often people with Lyme disease, when I look at their tongue, it's very swollen. There's a thick white coat, which is just screaming damp. I feel their pulse, and it's quite wiry in that way that it feels when there's extra water in the body. So I think it's no mistake that he sort of chose that formula as the one that he uses to most typically treat Lyme. And then there's another one called Dragon Pearls, which is much stronger heat clearing element, which is appropriate in those initial stages of infection when you've got a fever, when you've got a bullseye rash, when you've got other things that look hot, look like hot type conditions. And then just, you know, my own story using that product, I have not ever had Lyme, but I did have a bad case of conjunctivitis, and I thought, and it was like my eyes were red and uncomfortable and, you know, painful, I think, from being swollen and pussy, even. Again, another kind of heat sign. And I thought, okay, I'm going to try these dragon pearls and see what they do. Because it was a formula that, it's a formulation that's very similar to other things that my teacher, Dr. Huang, would use for hot type, you know, conditions like that. And boy, it really worked well. I was feeling, you know, within a few doses, I was feeling much more comfortable. And when I stopped it to try the eye drops I got from the doctor just to cover my bases, those symptoms started coming back. So I really got to experience those, not for Lyme disease, but I got to experience the benefit of that formula for what I'd call a hot type condition. So I really like them. The other thing I'd say about that line and why I like using them is that Heiner's very careful about his sourcing. The herbs are very high quality, and it's capsulized extracts of herbal formulas with just a little bit of clay to preserve them. So they're very clean. They're very high quality. You know, they're you know, examining most of those herbs that go into the products themselves. So I feel good about that as well.
I got started on lightning, and I really loved it from the moment I opened the bottle. And it was interesting because I've had other herbal teachers tell me before in their various traditions, including like European folk herbalism, you know, that your medicine will taste good to you when it's of use to you. And then when you lose your taste for it, you know, you're done with it. And it was so interesting to me that I opened the bottle and it just smelled so good to me. And I immediately wanted to take it. So, and just to sort of continue on my own case history, I'm now using an idea that, again, a variety of different practitioners, and not Chinese medicine practitioners, but across the board, pulsing your medications is another technique that's common with Lyme disease treatment, and it has to do with the life cycle of the spirochete and the organisms. And by pulsing, they mean having some sort of pattern of on and off again with whatever your treatment is, whether that's antibiotics, herbal medications, or even some of the other energetic applications. There's also evidently UV light exposure to the blood. People are finding very helpful, heat, some other therapies. Anyway, the idea that you take the treatment for, often what I hear is 3 weeks on, 1 week off for herbal medicine. So that's what I'm doing. And then the week that you're not taking your medication, the theory is that the any bacteria that have gone into hiding in biofilm, cyst form, then they sense that there's no...
The coast is clear.
The coast is clear, that your blood is free of anything that might be harmful to them. So they kind of come out to play, and then you demolish them again.
And that's, you know, there's kind of two schools of thought within Chinese herbal medicine. Some people like to constantly kind of change and switch up the formula, and I think there might be benefit to that. But, you know I also take direction from my teacher, Dr. Huang, who kind of likes to just get the right constitutional formula for people that, you know, fits the presentation, and you take it, and once your condition's resolved, you stop it. If it comes back again, you restart the formula, or you do, you know, maybe something in that family of formulas. But it's all really based on, you know, presentation at the time. And if you're not suffering from symptoms, then you stop. You don't take herbs like a health product. You take it, you know, as needed and according to presentation. So, so I'd say in response to that pulsing idea, I do believe in taking things kind of according to symptoms. So if you're having a Lyme flare, you take some stuff, but if you're feeling okay or it seems resolved, then you don't necessarily keep taking those herbs. You take it when it flares again, or again, maybe when they've come out of hiding.
And you also, so are there any other Chinese herbal protocols that you found particularly helpful besides the classical
pearls?
There's
different things. I mean, a lot of people have picked up Heiner's approach and products because he's, you know, offered webinars and instructions and training specifically on treatment of Lyme disease, which is not just limited to the capsules, but to the kinds of herbs and formulas and approaches that, that tend to work with Lyme and Lyme-like diseases. There is a guy, Dr. Zhang, in New York City, who a lot of people have seen. He has a nice little book out, and he's got some protocols and products, mostly in capsule form, that have been helpful to people.
Is SinoMedResearch.org?
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And he's in New York City, and I know somebody who was treated by him and did well on the protocol.
I do too. Yeah,
but also not completely gone.
Right.
So it's just hard to. It's just hard to know whether it's possible to eradicate Lyme. I don't know if it's more like malaria where people just have to live with it and keep it under control.
Right.
I don't know. It'd be interesting to look at a larger pool of people and see if anybody really is out of it. But I know this person did quite well with, you know, what Dr. Zhang had to offer, but then also made some, you know, further progress when, you know, he added in another approach. But to date, that had been the most successful thing so far, the Zhang protocol. So you can read his book or look at his online web sources. He's resources. He's pretty transparent about the formulas he uses and the products he uses. So I think he's one. I've had other people, you know, there's certain Chinese herbs that are considered to be active, kind of specifically active against Lyme. And so those might go into modifications of, you know, whatever formula you're using. Or there's a formula called Xiao Chai Hutong, the minor buplurum decoction, which is used for anything, you know, in the way my teacher describes it, anything that's viral or that comes and goes, kind of in the way that autoimmune or malaria or spirochetal diseases do. I've had other practitioners report that they've used that formula successfully for people with Lyme. So, you know, there's a lot out there.
In the scope of your own practice, you also practice nutritional therapy to some degree. That's a part of Chinese medicine. What recommendations do you find most helpful for your Lyme patients?
Well, I think probably the top one is people with Lyme or who are post-Lyme, they often seem to have a gluten sensitivity. That's very common. So that's probably the top one. And then just generally having an anti-inflammatory diet. So, you know, whole foods, not a lot of junk food, not a lot of sugar, not a lot of things like sugar or alcohol that kind of impair your immune system's ability to deal with an infection. Mm-hmm. So pretty much, you know, whole foods, clean diet. You know, identify if you've perhaps developed food sensitivities, like a sensitivity to gluten that you maybe didn't previously have. That's very common. I've seen that in many different people.
If you don't mind digressing for a moment on gluten sensitivity, because there's kind of, you know, there's a lot of awareness about it. And at the same time, there's also sometimes a backlash or a resistance, you know, to it. Can you just briefly maybe say some of the things that people present with that might make them want to consider that it could be gluten intolerance?
Yeah, I think this certainly the main thing is that it's not necessarily digestive. Some people do get bloating and other digestive symptoms. But, you know, and this is not necessarily Lyme people, but or people with Lyme, but unexplained skin rashes, that's often a food or a especially in particular a gluten sensitivity, brain fog. It just often seems to exacerbate the symptoms that accompany Lyme. Mm-hmm. So,
and, you work with, individuals in your practice, and make nutritional recommendations. Do you also have some specific maybe authors or programs or webinars that you would sort of endorse or say that you feel are good things for folks to look into on their own?
Do I?
And you can say any caveats, like this one's pretty good except for blah, blah, blah. Like a lot of the anti-inflammatory folks are pretty big name now are, let's see, is it Josh Axe? Is he the... No, the acupuncturist based in Berkeley.
Chris Kresser.
Chris Kresser.
Yeah, you know, that's something where I would actually like to develop, you know, better and more clear resources. So there's Chris Kresser. Mm-hmm. I know we've both looked at his blog and information, and I think he has some good, you know, approaches. He's, I guess, in the what you'd call the paleo camp, which for me just means meat and vegetables.
Right. And mostly vegetables,
I often refer to, if I think, you know,
Mark Hyman or...
I mean, his materials are great. Mm-hmm. I think I work with the nutritionist, Deb Phillips.
Who, locally, fairly locally.
Yeah.
She's in Great Barrington.
Barrington and Pittsfield. Mm-hmm. And she, if I think there's someone needs a more specialized, you know, approach to diet, I'll refer to her.
Dr. Terry Walls. Has
a lot
you
know, and
online.
Especially if people are dealing with MS, I, you know, refer them directly to Dr. Walls's TED Talk because she's such an inspiration. Mm-hmm. She had access to the best of what Western medicine had to offer, and she was, you know, with MS and in a wheelchair, and through she was very rigorous in how she modified. She started off with paleo diet, but how she modified that diet, you know, with supplements and very specific ways of eating, she did get and keep herself out of a wheelchair.
Yeah.
So she's one of the most inspiring stories of what diet can do when you're looking at autoimmune disease. And again, I really put Lyme in this autoimmune, chronic inflammatory, you know, kind of camp, and you have to treat it that way. And you can keep it under control, but you really have to work at it. And you have really, as she did, like, again, it wasn't just a matter of eating paleo. She refined her protocol, and now she's got a book out, thankfully.
Yeah, she's also sponsoring a lot of clinical trials, and I think she's a great bridge builder between what has been lacking in Western medicine and what it can accomplish. And she's really working to sort of develop clinical trials and documentation so that, for example, the insurance and sort of institutional side of Western medicine can help ordinary citizens access the information they need and the treatment they need, incorporating nutritional therapy better than it does now. So that's,
well, and I, you know, I can think of
to.
One person that I've treated who, again, I think her sister also has MS. She's doing much better because she's taken the dietary approach and she's nearly symptom free. And so diet just has huge effects when you're looking at something like Lyme or again, other autoimmune diseases, MS, rheumatoid arthritis, any of these things. It's a critical component that's not supported in the Western medical system, and it's complicated for people. So they do need specialized help, and that often is something that's not available. And I'm glad to hear that she's kind of, you know, kind of blazing the trail for integrating more of that kind of nutritional therapy in the treatment of these very complex diseases that can be controlled, but it's not simple.
Yeah, it's not simple. And, you know, don't feel bad if you feel confused by all this. And that's why it's really useful to work with a practitioner. I mean, it's at this point probably, I would say, critical and necessary that you inform yourself from a variety of sources independently if you're able to do that. But, you know, when you're not feeling well, especially when you have brain fog, it is really useful to work with one or more practitioners on different fronts.
You know, just I'm just going to share this while I'm thinking of it. You know, the other problem people suffering from Lyme encounter is misdiagnosis and going down the wrong paths of diagnosis and treatment. And I think I'm thinking of one person that recently did pass away, and I think definitely she had chronic Lyme, but she had been, you know, misdiagnosed with ALS, with a, what is it, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, Lou Gehrig's disease, which she didn't really fit the presentation for that because that is, you know, you get muscle wasting, but she had pain.
Right.
And she was eventually under the treatment of a Lyme literate doctor with antibiotics. But by that point, she was so progressed, she saw some improvement. But then I think she was taking IV antibiotics, and that IV failed. And at that point, she just decided she was so tired, she really gave up at that point. And she did recently pass away. And that, unfortunately, can be the end result of chronic Lyme disease. But again, just emphasizing that people get misdiagnosed with thyroid condition, hormonal imbalances,
fibromyalgia,
ALS is not an uncommon one.
Yeah.
And so you really have to be vigilant and just know that, you know, you might have the proper diagnosis or you might be misdiagnosed, because people, you know, again, that's the importance of seeing a Lyme literate physician or practitioner, because they know what to look for. They know how to diagnose and recognize this disease outside of testing, because testing doesn't tell you much.
Yeah. Well, maybe let's jump to a couple Lyme literate physicians we've heard good things about and refer people to in the area. And then we'll maybe give a little rundown of some other therapies that you've seen people receiving relief from. So let's see, we have Dr. Kenneth Bach in Rhinebeck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's, what would he be considered, functional medicine? So he can prescribe everything from antibiotics to adjunct therapies that might be helpful. And he would be Lyme literate.
His brother, Stephen Bach, also is Lyme literate and works out of Rhinebeck and Albany. You
know? Should be. I'm not sure. Yes.
Yeah.
There's the brothers Bach. So yeah, there's both of them. The person that I had personally recommend, Dr. Kenneth Bach, is trusted, you know.
They
colleague.
Practiced in the same office for many years, and I think they parted offices not out of any enmity, but just I think they wanted different structures for sort of their intake of patients. So
yeah.
But otherwise they actually
So don't get confused. Yeah, I've personally had recommended to me Dr. Kenneth Bach, but I think they're both have good reputations. There is Dr. Cameron in Mount Kisco. I think he's in Mount Kisco, who is antibiotics only, but he is Lyme literate, and he's, you know, one of those people who is well known for his treatment of Lyme. Dr. Horowitz, I think we've both heard of. He's got a book. He is also integrative.
Is he in Hyde Park?
That sounds about right. And then there's the Stram Center in Del Mar, which I think has multi-practitioners, but again, integrative, and you can get everything from antibiotics to other interventions and recommendations. But again, I really advocate for a multi-pronged approach when it comes to Lyme. I think that makes the most sense.
And then Deb Phillips, the nutritionist you mentioned earlier, she's based in Great Barrington.
Great Barrington and Pittsfield.
And she works with something called Biocidin and the kinase products.
That's one of the things that she's introduced me to, which is kind of a broad spectrum antimicrobial that she's found useful for people.
Is that herbal based or is
herbal?
It...
Yeah, more like a Western herbal. So I deal mostly in Chinese herbs, but that's a Western herbal formulation. So herbs that would be more familiar to you probably, although I recognize some of them. I recognize some of them as things that are commonly used by Western herbalists as antimicrobials.
There are some plants that grow all over the world and are in multiple pharmacopoeias for sure, or variations like the artemisias, for example. And what are the kinase products that break through the biofilms? And the biofilm is something that the spirochete manufacturers to
I think both you and I probably have an inadequate understanding of what biofilms are, but we can say that it's something that is used to protect that parasite, and there are products that are known to break through that. So some of the Chinese herbs that Heiner talks about in his seminars are able to break through the biofilms. And then specifically, and this is something I've talked with Deb about, the kinase products. So there's natokinase, there's something called Boluoke. There's different kinase products that basically have the ability, they thin the blood and they're able to break through those biofilms. And sometimes if you're able to break through those biofilms, then you can get the herbs and the medicine in there to actually attack the spirochete. That's kind of the idea. That's the benefit of breaking down the biofilm, is that then your herbals and medicinals and maybe even antibiotics can get in there. And I guess we're back to killing bugs, but
yeah, it is a major part of the strategy. But
it's part of it.
Yeah. But just part. Yeah. And I don't know, how do you say it, Cowden or Cowden protocol?
Yeah, I guess we don't know. I guess I call it the Cowden protocol. It was something I'm only familiar with in that it's very, very specific. There's a range of products, and you take specific number of drops on this day. And
He's all about the timing. He's very precise with the timing and the pulsing.
How could you know it to that degree of specificity? But maybe I will say I did treat somebody for something else that I remember her saying she did use the Cowden protocol successfully. Mm-hmm. So again, I think it's another one of those things that might work, or it might work for certain people.
One thing
I
that,
wish it was the magic bullet, but I can't say that.
One thing that appeals to me about the Cowden protocol is that it's very inclusive in its within itself. It contains things to kill the bugs, but it also contains products like there's a I think it's a parsley-based substance to detoxify the liver. We were talking earlier about Hillary thing, stressing the importance because, you know, when you're, and this may be folks who've experienced cancer treatments, chemotherapy and radiation, you know, some other, another treatment protocol where you have to kill something that's living in your body, you also have to help your body excrete the byproducts from that process, because that can make you sick as well. The Herxheimer reaction. I always want to say Herkimer, like Herkimer diamonds. Herxheimer reaction, which was first discovered, I believe, by doctors treating folks with tuberculosis with high doses of antibiotics, where they started to feel better and then they got sick again. And there's the feeling sick the second time was due to their body being sort of overwhelmed by dead bacteria, which sometimes make endotoxins as they're dying.
And like that's something you have to be careful of with Lyme patients, is not giving them too many antibiotics or too much medication at one time, because they can be overwhelmed by the detox reaction, the die off of the spirochetes, and your body's having to deal with that. So that's another thing to be aware of. Another, and related to that, you have to be aware of that. If you're taking herbals or antibiotics that are going to kill the spirochetes, that you may get a Herxheimer reaction and feel worse before you get better. You had that experience of feeling worse, and then you felt better, but then you felt worse because not from a Herxheimer reaction, because the spirochetes were reproducing in your body.
Yeah. So some of the strategies for detoxing include other herbals, like typically liver supporting herbs, you know, bitter greens and things like that. But some other strategies,
and,
right?
Infrared sauna and sweating. You know, so a lot of times people do, people horribly afflicted with Lyme disease, the last thing they want to do is go out and run around. But if you can make yourself sweat, again, infrared sauna is a decent way of doing that.
And the heat itself, also the spirochetes hate the heat. Heat, I believe, 106 degrees sustained for a certain amount of time, maybe 6 hours, actually kills the organism.
Well, and
which, of course, in your body, that you would be, you could probably get brain damage if that. But there is a clinic in Switzerland, I read, that takes its patients and puts them under general anesthesia and basically heats their bodies up to 106 degrees in order to kill the organisms. You know, some people have found that helpful, evidently. So the heat alone also does kill the organisms, and so does oxygen. They don't enjoy the spirochetes don't having.
I think that's I don't know if this relates to it, but I know some people are using ozone therapy.
Right,
like the
right.
integrative clinics, they're using ozone therapy. That's another thing I hear come up.
Again, you know, some of this is still very experimental, and there isn't, you know, clinical documentation to back it up. Anecdotal and information, though, can be very helpful in the meantime, especially if you're suffering and you want to feel better. You know, if it's something that is within your financial accessibility and comfort levels, you know, experimentation can really do some good. So we also, we talked about the infrared saunas. What else?
Well, you know, thing that I think is important on this list is something called TikToks, which are internal essential oils. And again, in Hillary Thing's telesummit, we heard from Greg Lee, who's in Maryland. He's an acupuncturist, but he was also starting to use internal essential oils. So these things can be useful. And again, another, you know, consumable that potentially is helpful at getting rid of the Lyme disease. I learned about TikToks because I have a friend who got a hold of some TikToks for her dog who had Lyme disease. And that helped the dog. And the person who's using those, because they're difficult to get, I think you have to get them from France. They're not readily available here. So I have referred people to Therese Bologna in Millbrook, because she is able to get those TikToks. And I've heard of good results. But again, I don't know if, you know, one person that I sent definitely some positive effect. She's not free of Lyme disease. They did help. So again, I think those are another of those products that can be helpful.
How about, have any of your patients used either or both activated charcoal and montmelieronite clay a type of clay to chelate sort of the endotoxins and other things out of the system?
I have one person using the activated carbon. One thing to know about that is you should only do it periodically or if you really need it or if you've had exposure to a food that you're sensitive to, because it strips other minerals and things from your body. But that would fall under the heading of detox therapies that you need to employ along with your Lyme disease treatments. I haven't specifically used it a lot, but yeah, it's one of those things that can be helpful.
Holistic veterinarians often make use of the clay as an active chelating agent, especially for animals who've been exposed to like organophosphates and heavy metals and things. But I do know humans who've found it useful for those things, but also in the...
I'd say it's one of those things that you use to pull things out specifically, but you don't take it every day like a vitamin.
Right. The Rife machine...
Yeah, which a weird and wacky machine that many of us have heard about. You know, some people say, I remember hearing one case of a person that I don't know personally, but someone I know who her niece, you know, had not success with other therapies, but the Rife got her up and walking again. So it's one of those things that can be considered, not easy to get a hold of, not easy to access, certainly probably not something that most, you know, Western medical professionals could, you know, reasonably recommend. But I do hear for some people that it's been helpful.
And the Biomat is that also an infrared
technology? I think that's an infrared thing.
It doesn't heat your core temperature to the same degree a sauna would, but some people still find that helpful, don't they?
I can't think of anybody specifically, but I know Biomat's out there is one of those helpful things.
Let's see, on our little list,
miss anything?
I also have Greg Lee, an acupuncturist.
Yeah, and I did mention him. He's the acupuncturist in Maryland who uses a range of things, but I know more recently he's using essential oils, internal essential oils, not just sniffing them, but internal essential oils, kind of similar to the TikTok product.
And just for folks, please... at least read up about that. Don't take essential oils that you buy at the health food store internally necessarily.
Absolutely. I think any of that goes without saying. Yeah. My strong recommendation is that people work with professionals and practitioners and doctors that they trust on these issues.
And sourcing is very important for all herbal medicines, but also essential oils. In the United States, we don't have appropriate regulations for solvents and things that are sometimes used to... So not all... essential oils that you can buy here commercially are safe to take internally. So definitely work with someone
on that. Work with people that you trust and products that you trust.
For sure. And so let's see, Greg Lee's website is goodbyelyme.com. Hillary Thing, who we were talking about earlier, uprootinglyme.com. And she offers a variety of ways of working with her sort of monthly...
She's got a monthly program that she recently developed that sort of, followed this telethink tank that she created. So people can, at various price levels, depending on how intensely you need to work with her, you kind of commit to a six-month program and you pay a certain amount per month, I think $300 on up. Maybe there's like three different levels depending on what you need. But I think, you know, I based on the professionals that she put together for that telethink tank, I think that I suspect she has good experience working with Lyme, even though I don't know anybody personally who's worked with her. I know other practitioners that know her. But I was impressed, and I thought she put together a very helpful program.
Let's see, anyone else that we didn't mention? And we mentioned Deb Phillips, the nutritionist based in Great Barrington.
And I'm not sure of her website, but you can Google Deb Phillips Nutrition. Might be debphillips.biz. I'm not sure.
Let's see, anything else you would like to say to folks listening who think they might have Lyme, who are living with Lyme, are just interested in Lyme disease.
Yeah, I think I already said it. Just, you know, don't give up, and just know that there are a range of things that can be helpful with Lyme disease, and that's not limited to antibiotics. Antibiotics can be an important tool, but certainly, especially if you're dealing with, you know, what seem to be chronic Lyme symptoms, don't stop there.
And so we've been speaking with Andrea Elliott. Andrea, what's your website if folks want to get in touch with you?
I am elliottacupuncture.net.
And that's Elliott, E-L-L-I-O-T-T.
Yep, two L's, two T's.
How are we? Are we out of time? So thanks so much, Andrea, for being in the studio with us today. Lauren will return for our January show, as always, the fourth Monday of the month at 2 p.m. And thank you so much, folks, for listening. Roots Runners Rhizomes, Health and Healing from the Underground. Be well.